Dylan, in conversations with you earlier, we've talked about a number of things, including maybe your background a bit on the lake as a boat operator at one time. Let's talk a little bit about that. When were you working on the lake?
Well, I started going up the lake 1921.
And were you working commercially then?
No, in 1921, I was, Fred Howard had a charter boat, and I acted as his deckhand.
How big a boat was it?
I think about 32 feet, if I remember right.
What kind of charters did you take, normally?
Well, in those days, they'd be a group of people come from over the coast or any place. 15, 20, 30 in the bunch. They'd go to Wostehekin, Meadow Creek, Lucerne. They'd stay for a week or 10 days at a time. We'd just leave them there and go back and get them. I remember he'd have three or four parties up the lake at one time.
What kind of boat, what kind of power did it have? Is it?
He had an old Hudson motor in that. Six-cylinder and three blocks, two cylinders to a block.
Okay, and what kind of speed would this boat have made?
Oh, I don't remember now. I've probably 12, 14 knots.
How was it in rough water?
It was rough.
Was it just beat like, you know?
Oh yeah, you had to slow down. If you to go too fast, well, it'd pound. You just felt like you'd break it in two.
When we've talked before about more activity on the lake then than now, more.
Well, yeah, I think there's more people on the lake then.
Tell me about that. What do you mean?
Well, not like Lucerne. It seemed to me like that there was, well, I know there's more people there than they ever have been.
Okay, there were encampments all up and down the lake. You think there were more boats on the lake then? Just,
well, no, not, there was more bigger boats on the lake then. See, they didn't have any 16, 18, 20 foot stuff then. It was all more or less passenger charter boats.
Let's talk a bit about those days. How long did you work as in the charter boat capacity? You remember?
Well, I say when I worked there, I was all the time I was going with Fred, I really wasn't working. I was just going more or less for a trip and how many fish and fried potatoes he'd cook for me.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit. You mentioned fishing. We've talked about fishing before. Fishing on Lake Chelan used to be different than it is now.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about that. Why?
I can remember, Fred, we'd start up the lake a lot of time at night to go after a party he had up there. Fred liked to have a little nip of moonshine now and then. He'd get about half funny there. 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night. Come on, let's go now. We get up, I remember Canoe Creek and Prince Creek. He generally get a little sleepy and we'd tie up and right the mouth of the creek. I can remember Fred, I don't know how many times, get up and just stand there with his old long underwear on in the morning, casting out the stern of the boat, catching rainbow and cutthroat. He always used to tell a story about, didn't matter, well, I was just a kid then, didn't matter how many fish he caught, I'd eat them. If he caught two, I'd eat two. If he caught ten, I'd eat ten. He always used to tell a story.
That'd be breakfast.
Yeah.
The fishing was apparently better then.
Oh, yes, it was. You'd get fish any place in the lake then.
Any idea why?
I don't have any idea why then, but
would you think what do you think's happened to the fishing?
Well, I think probably the spawning beds after they raised, before they raised the lake, you know.
Yeah.
I think they just, when they raised the lake, they tore up most of the spawning beds. Then it might have been fished out. They didn't replant anything, I don't believe, then.
Hmm. Let's talk, you, prior to that time, were involved, growing up here. I get the impression you grew up in the Lakeside area. Is that right?
Well, I really grew up on BB Orchard.
Okay, now that's, where's that?
That's...
Right where it's at now?
Right where it is now.
Okay. We were talking earlier about a program that we had earlier in our Month of Heritage, talking about the history of apples a little bit. Tell us about your experiences at BB.
We moved to BB in 1915. That was a year after the railroad, I think. I think the railroad finished up here in 14. Mm-hmm. We were Wenatchee, and we moved to BB. 1915. We came up on the railroad. Stayed all night in the old hotel at Chelan Falls. It's torn down now.
What was it called? You remember?
I can't remember.
Yeah,
the
okay.
name. Just
okay.
Chelan Falls Hotel, I think. So I was only 6 years old then. I can remember they heated rocks in the oven downstairs and carried up and put in the foot of her bed. It was March and it was cold yet.
Did you do that or did they do that as part of the hotel?
No, they done that part of the hotel.
Okay,
deal.
Okay.
We stayed all night in there. The next morning, Tom Coyle came down the other side of the river, team in the wagon, come across Charlie Carter's ferry, picked us up. Loaded all the stuff in, which wasn't very much.
You remember the ferry?
Charlie, I don't know if it had a name of it. It was Chelan Falls. Charlie Carter run the ferry at that time.
What kind of ferry was it? We've never talked about that, I don't think, ever. Was it a...
No, I guess. It was a powered ferry. It wasn't cable.
It was?
No, it was power.
Hmm. How big was it?
Oh, golly, I can't remember.
Okay.
I was too scared. I could pull a stocking cap down over our head going across there. We didn't like that too much.
Okay. Back to the story of going to BB.
Anyway, we went up. We moved a clerk to North End of the ranch. There was half a dozen tent houses there. Mm-hmm. I think it was 9 by 12 tents. And in the center, they had the kitchen. That's where we started to live. Among the rattlesnakes.
The orchard wasn't really all there.
Well, they always call that 400 acres. I don't think it was all ever planted before. It might be now, but at that time, I don't think it was. But they always called it, I think the property was 400.
Was it bearing orchard then?
Well, I think the first year we were there, they might have had a few apples. I don't remember if the first or second year, I think they picked 19 packed boxes, or 19 boxes off of that. Now they had to go a long ways to get an apple. My dad and Adam Miller's wife, she's still living out here.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember standing there with white gloves and polishing those apples. As I recall, it was 19 boxes.
Hmm.
They signed them up and sent them back east to stock to the BB stockholders, I guess, the head guy.
Uh-huh.
Bill Ouls put them in a team in a wagon over on the ranch, hauled them down the other side of the river to Chelan Falls again, across the ferry, and up this old road back to the ferry, come by the dump over there, through Chelan and back down to the depot, put them on the train.
Yeah. How long were you living there?
Let's see, we went there in 15 and moved up to Lakeside in 1921.
Was there a school there? Did you go to school?
The first school I went to was in the bunkhouse down there. I think the first 2 years that we had school in the bunkhouse. The fellow stayed there at night and we had school there in the daytime.
Mm-hmm.
This is Coe Spear, was a teacher. Talking about that school over here in this local museum, there's a picture of that school. I'm in it.
And that was in what year, do you think?
That was in 19... Well, in fact, the picture shows a calendar hanging on the wall. You can see the year 1915 on the calendar.
What was your education like? Can you remember what you were studying? Did you just do math and spelling?
Oh, yeah, we had regular history, arithmetic. They had a deal in to call hygiene or something. What do they call that now? They don't call it...
Probably health. What was hygiene?
I don't remember.
Okay.
Yeah, we took sewing lessons down there, even the boys did.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, so you must have had a pretty rounded education.
Yeah, well, I didn't go too far through school. In fact, I always tell the story I had to quit school to keep my son from passing me.
Okay, we'll be back in just a second. We're talking with Dylan Henderson, I guess a longtime resident of the area. He's been in the Lake Chelan area since around 1915, is mm-hmm. that right? And you moved to Lakeside area when, you say? About 1921?
1921.
Let's talk about what Lakeside was like then. Was it called Lakeside then?
Yes, it was Lakeside then. I think they should have left it Lakeside.
I think they did, didn't they? You're referring to the incorporation within the city? Yeah. Let's talk about the area then. What was it like? What was there?
Well, they had the main street there. In fact, about where I live right now, was the main street of Lakeside. They had a Dexter and Hardenberg store there. At one time, this for my time, the saloon, post office. Across the street, toward the lake, they had some, I remember some little apartments or houses there. Old Granddad Pennell lived in one of them. George Pennell's grandfather.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember some of the, maybe the other names, the personalities that...
Well, Joel Neal, of course, had a blacksmith shop. This Fred Howard I spoke about had the boat. He and Ray Culver had a garage in the back of the shop, and Joel had his blacksmith shop right in front. He was, that's where the kids all hung out.
I remember talking to someone about that once. Used to go there all the time.
Yeah, that's where the first thing in the morning, that's where the kids gathered.
On the way to school, or just...
No, just like in the summertime, wouldn't we? I remember Lorne O'Neill, Joe's son, about my age. Joe, he had one gas pump out in front. And he'd leave Lorne and I there sometime to take care of that gas pump. He had one barrel of oil, Golden Shell. That's all the oil he had, only one kind. But somebody stop us, ask us for Zerline or something. Yeah, we got it. We'd just take it out of that same barrel. But we got caught. Guy came in one time, Joe waiting on him, he asked for this oil, and now Joe says, don't handle it. Well, he says, don't understand that. He says, I got a quart of it here yesterday, so we got in little trouble there.
Well, how many kids were living in the Lakeside area then? Was a group of you, what, 10, 20 get together?
Yeah, we had a Lakeside gang and a Chelan gang.
Was there rivalry?
Well, over a bobsled.
You know, what do you mean?
The mill crew, Ralph Holly and Ben Navant, they built a bobsled down there in the shop. Seemed like they call it a cannonball. Well, the Chelan guys claimed that belonged to Chelan, and we thought it belonged to Lakeside, and so we'd get it, use it, and take way back halfway up the butte and hide it. They'd come find it. Then take us about a week, come back over here, and we'd find up above a graveyard someplace and take it back.
Now let's talk about it. If you say halfway up the butte, there were some people probably living on the butte then, more than now.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, what about up towards Union Valley? Do you recollect any activities up in that area that, you know, you might have been involved in?
Well, at that time, I never had been up in Union Valley. there were people up there.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember too much.
What was your dad doing this time?
He worked in an orchard.
Okay.
He worked in an orchard for all of his life. He was a funny character. I remember down at Beebe, they used to... There was a big family of us. There were 7 boys and 1 girl. The fellas asked Dad one time out in the orchard, "How many kids you got now?" Dad said, "I don't know. I haven't been home since morning."
The 7 of you, were you all in the same age group? I mean, you know, close enough together that you played and explored and whatnot?
Oh, yeah.
Together? Okay. You, because you're living out there, probably started developing your like for the lake and boats and things about then.
Well, that's right. That's where I got started with Fred Howard, on that old boat dock there, you see.
Where was that old boat dock? You're talking about the big dock where the steamers used to be? And
well, yeah, now the Joe O'Neill's, the blacksmith shop and the garage was setting right over where the gas house on the boat company dock is now.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, in low water, you can still see a few horseshoe nail stuff down there in the ground. I think came out of that.
Mm-hmm.
There was a dock there, then toward Lakeside was Tuttle's dock, as I remember it.
And he was, of course, involved in the big boats.
Tuttle had the, he was the main, mm-hmm. That was the boat company then.
Mm-hmm. Most of that area is now underwater?
About it all is.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. See, we lived in Lakeside. The street we lived on Lakeside is underwater now. In fact, from where I live right now, toward Johnson Point, is right toward where Ralph Ellison lives.
Mm-hmm.
There's a street there with whole Higley's and Bert Huey and Cottrell. 7-8 houses right along there in line.
Of course, I might be jumping ahead of myself a little bit, but the lake, when the lake was raised, there was a lot of activity going on around here. Places were building, there were hundreds of guys around.
That's right.
What was it like? What do you recollect?
My dad had to talk about the people came here. We down here, the old house is still there, down just this side of the youth center. Dad built that house. That's a house I claim we built it and moved into it the same day. It wasn't quite right, but it's down there. See, when they started to raise the lake, they had our house jacked up. They were moving all that row of houses there.
Mm-hmm.
They were putting the blocks on, and we were still in there. So Dad had to do something real quick. He went down there and bought 8 lots from Dietrich boys. They're still here, some of them.
Mm-hmm.
8 lots for $800.
And so he just commenced to build the house?
Just build the house, put 2x12s on end, gray paper on the wall. The wind blow the paper back away from the wall where you could. That house still there. And then they finally built. My mother started making bread.
For hire.
You might have heard something about that. I don't. But she took a note. She made some bread and gave somebody a loaf or two at one time, and then they just gardened. So they built a little addition on that, and that I don't know where he got it. A stove with about 6-7 ovens in it. Mother would make bread there every day, and us kids wrapped that by hand.
Hmm.
People come get it just fast as we get it wrapped.
Now what? Now time framework. This must have been around 27, 8, somewhere.
That now? Was in 25, 6,
okay.
7.
Okay. All of a sudden, you know, you became a part of the Chelan gang. You know, you used to be from Lake. Did you still go? I'm assuming you still went over to the boats. You had to go.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I've still hung around there.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go back up a little bit. there was a guy that came to town. We talked about this before off the air. To buy up a bunch of property for the railroad so they could build the dam.
Yes, one day there was a fellow stopped over there and talked to Fred Howard. He wanted to hire a boat. As I recall his name, Major Anderson, elderly fellow.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he gave Fred $35 a day for the boat.
Which had to be darn good money, didn't it?
It was.
Oh, yeah.
And we took him up the lake, and we didn't stop till we got the other side of Manson, where he couldn't get to by car, and we didn't know what that fellow was doing, really. We'd go along, if he'd see any kind of a building along the lake shore, we'd have to stop, and maybe he'd just look at it from the boat, and maybe we'd have to go in and help him out of the boat, and he'd go take a look. We got about halfway up one side of the lake before we found out what he was doing, and he was evidently was appraising the property to buy right away when they start to raise the lake.
And that he was working for Great Northern.
Great Northern Railroad.
How long did that trip take? You went all the way up to Stehekin one side and back down?
Oh, we had him on the lake for 2 or 3 days.
Did you? You didn't come home of the
evening? No, we'd stay at, I think the first place we stayed was Meadow Creek. That used to be the place to stay. Everybody went up and down the lake. Always wanted to stay at Meadow Creek. There's a couple named Mr. and Mrs. Gray. Really had good food, and that's where everybody tried to stop.
So you probably stayed at Meadow Creek and then maybe again at Lucerne coming down or something?
Lucerne, then Stehekin. Mm-hmm. See, Stehekin then was out in the middle of the river. That's where the lake was raised.
You remember, of course, the old hotel? Do you remember?
I just remember seeing the Fields Hotel. See, they tore that down about the time they started to raise the lake.
Mm-hmm.
But I just remember seeing it one time is all.
What was Stehekin like then? What other things were there? Was there?
Well, yeah. Blankenship had to, he had a place there.
Was the mining activity going on then? Were things cranking up at Holden?
Now, I was too young then to know too much about that mining deal, but they, right at that time, I don't think they was doing much with that mine.
Okay, we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Earlier, they had little activity there.
From your, did you complete school? Did you go to a lakeside school? Did you go to a Chelan school?
I went to lakeside school about 10 minutes.
So what was that about?
I was making boxes out at Manson when I started to go to lakeside in the 8th grade.
Mm-hmm.
It took me 2 years to get through the 7th grade over here.
In Chelan?
Yeah.
Okay. Where was that school then?
It's sitting right where the high school is now, about the old building.
Yeah.
The old school had the grade school downstairs and high school upstairs. That's one reason I didn't get through grade school over here. I spent too much time in the high school.
I see.
With some of them older guys. I thought I was a little bigger, I guess.
Then you went over, you were working at the box factory?
No, Dad's working for Nels Hall at Manson, and I was making boxes. Us kids all learned to make boxes those days.
Oh, yeah.
I started that on the BB Ranch. So Dad said, well, you got to go to school. Well, I went over to Lakeside that morning. I said, Big couldn't hardly get in the seat to start with. I sat clear in the back of the room. Teacher named Mrs. Shaw. She turned around right on the blackboard. Anyhow, had her back turned. I got up and went out the back door and caught a ride in Manson.
Now
I got in little trouble there, too. Dad heard me pound the nails up there. Here he comes. But that was the end of my school.
Okay. How long did you work doing orchard work then? I'm assuming you must have done some on and off work here and there.
Well, because I started out making boxes of BB nuts. I was 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
A fellow named Slim Carell, he was an old timer here. His dad was Dave Carell. A lot of the old timers remember Dave. He's quite a tough old guy.
Mm-hmm.
what Slim was making there, and I went down, always hung around his place, and he gave me a job piling his boxes. And every time he'd get away from the bench, I'd grab his hatchet and get up there. So one day he said, we're just going to change this, and we'll just make you a bench of your own. That's how I got started. I stayed out of school when I was at BB 1 year and lit it after during apple harvest. And went back to school. At that time, they'd built a new schoolhouse right across the street from the packing shed.
When was it that you... I got the impression that at one time or another, you ended up working for the boat company.
Well, when Dave Harris and Aaron Moore came here, now, see, I'd been running up down the lake with Fred Howard.
Uh-huh.
Old boat called the Scout. Dave and Aaron, they got the mail contract from Tuttle's.
Was that a rivalry?
No, I think they just... As I remember Dave and Aaron talking about it, they just bid on that, just trying to be doing something, and then they got it. As I remember, they got the mail contract for $5,000.
That's 1 year.
$5,000 a year. Well, anyway, it was kind of a hurry-up deal. I remember we were standing there, and Fred Howard was talking to him, and they said, well, we've got to get a boat. And Fred pointed down the dock. He says, that's for sale. Well, how much? And I believe Fred said $1,500, and they bought it. And they said, we've got to get a guy to run it. Fred pointed at me. He said, that boy there can run it. So I was just 16 years old. You had to be 18. So I remember Fred come over to the house and told me. He said, now you tell them that you're 18 years old. Because at that time I had to get a license. I don't remember how it just happened, I guess, as an inspector from Olympia was here, a fellow named Gilday. Fred says he'll be down at Camel Hotel, the old hotel there now in the lobby, tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, and you've got to get a license. Well, I didn't know anything about license, but Fred brought me over a little pamphlet, the rules and regulations and all everything on it. So I set up to start studying that, and I knew I wasn't going to remember everything, so I wrote it. I copied it off. I was up most of the night, scared to death. I went down next morning and got a license. I told him I was 18, and I think I ran, if I remember, about 6 or 7 months I run the mail boat.
You by yourself?
Yeah, well, Dave or Aaron, one with me.
Mm-hmm.
The first trip we made was scared, if Aaron Moore went the first trip, and he would definitely scared the water. If he'd known how scared I was, I believe he'd jumped overboard. Because, I didn't... It's a little different. Fred wasn't there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just happened to be a rough day, too.
Lake used to get rough, too, huh?
Well, yeah, it got rough. But then, I'm talking about the wind on that. Now, it used to be in March, we just figured just about 30 days of wind. And then it was calmed down, and I remember I used to want it to blow, because being a kid, you didn't get to bed too early at night, and you couldn't stay awake hardly.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. But anyway, I run that, I think, 6-7 months, and they thought I was 18 all the time. And there was an old fellow that used to be here, Jack Wilson. He'd been around Lakeside and run boats before. He'd gone to the coast to work someplace, and something happened. He came back. This old Joel Neal, the old blacksmith that we spoke about, he was a great friend of Jack Wilson, and Jack was looking for a job again. And Joe knew I was only 16 years old, because I was, I think, the same age as his boy, Lauren.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to the, that's how they found out then. Well, they were under bond, you know, with the mail run, and if something would have happened, I suppose it would have broke them. But boy, they got me off of there.
Let's talk about those times when you're running up and down the lake. That was the first time you were up and down by yourself.
Yeah.
Fairly regularly.
Every day then it went.
And some things must have happened. There must be some unique incidents or some
things. Well, there was a lot of things. In the first place, that old Hudson motor I spoke about a little while ago. See, we had to, more or less of a schedule to make with that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first thing with Haywire. The clutch, reverse gear went out of it. And making all those stops. Now, at that time, we made, I believe, 23 stops on the lake. I saw a card. Earl Bryant had a card of all those stops here just last past year.
In other words, there was probably you were stopping as soon as first, probably past First Creek, but you started stopping in Granite Falls and things like that?
I think the First Creek was the first stop at Watson's.
Yeah.
And then all houses up and down the lake. Now, at that time, some of those docks were a little hard to get to in the down lake wind.
And, so what happened when the reverse gear went out?
Well, one funny thing that I know what you're waiting for. I think when I had the thing tied in the head, we would come down the lake and it wouldn't stay in gear. It had a long lever, just reach around here to right hand to get it, and it came through a bracket over the engine. So I just, we had quite a little ways to go from the last stop down to Watson, to First Creek. I got tired of holding that, so I took a piece of wire and wired it in. So to stay, Dave and we sitting there talking and come into First Creek and slowed down like you naturally do and got ready to throw it in neutral. I couldn't get out of gear. I was still ahead. I just barely had room enough to make a turn and get away from there.
You didn't hit the dock or anything?
Didn't hit nothing, but I didn't tie it down anymore. And then finally that old scout, it broke down one time and we left the dock and something went wrong. We had to come back and we got Jim Nichols. Now he was an old timer here. He goes way back. I think he was one of the guys that first owned the Getty property at one time, as I remember. But we got his boat. He had an old boat called a Chackawanna or something. A little, I think a one-cylinder motor sitting back in the middle of it. So we took the mail that day with Jim. Now that boat only make about 7 knots. If you hit a dock full speed ahead, you wouldn't hurt nothing. So we got into our first stop of First Creek. Jim sat on a little wooden stool up forward, and when he'd get ready to land, he'd have to run back and slow the motor down some way. And he slowed down out there in the middle of the lake like he might have been going pretty fast. Well, I knew then we were in trouble. We didn't get back 10 o'clock at night.
Took you that long to make the trip?
Well, yeah, the way he runs, he'd be 30 minutes to one landing where we'd be 5 minutes before.
From the mailboat experiences, then what happened?
Well, after they found out they got me off of that thing. Aaron Moore had he also had a well drilling outfit, and he took me out to around Manson. I worked on that, and he finally got rid of me. He was a little bit mad yet about me lying to him. Well, Dave Harris didn't. It kind of tickled Dave, but but then that's about the time they started raising the lake then.
Let's talk about some other things. Do you recollect the fire that burned the pavilion?
Oh, yeah.
Were you around then?
Yeah.
Where were you living?
We were living at, let's see, I think when that fire, that pavilion, we were living just the other side of the Forest Service.
So you saw it probably, huh?
Office.
Can you recollect seeing the fire, or?
Yeah, I can remember. I think Ray Brown was running that pavilion then. I know we had some nickel slot machines. That's the thing, they threw them all out or something. That's the next morning, this kid's over hunting nickels in the sand. I can remember that.
They had some slot machines there.
Yeah, I remember they had slot machines in that deal. I don't know if those were legal then or not, but they were there and they threw them out. And
how old were you then?
Oh, God, I don't know.
Well, it's...
Now, that pavilion was built down on the water, closer to the water.
Okay, the one you're talking about now?
The one that burnt. Then they built up on the highway, level with the highway, mm-hmm. Last one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's where they started the roller skating rink, when
right.
They had it up. That was a stupid thing I ever saw. The guy, nobody around here roller skated.
So
Lyle Higgins' dad, he was undertaker and had the ambulance stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He made money there because when they started that roller skating rink, he just backed the ambulance up over and wait because he knew somebody was going to have a broken leg or hip or something. Yeah, he'd just back in there and wait.
Okay.
But the old pavilion that we missed, the one that was down right on the lake shore and built mm-hmm. out over the water right mm-hmm. below Cameron's Hotel, that was the place.
Why?
Well, I don't know. That.
They have dances?
They had dances there, and people came from all over the Omak, Okanagan, Kashmir, everywhere, Wenatchee. That place packed.
Hmm.
You're probably trying to get me to tell them us kids throw the bullfrogs on the floor.
Well, I was just recollecting a story that I think, there was a dance going on there once, and you were up to something. You're a practical joker. I know
there was an old frog pond at Lakeside.
Right.
You catch some pretty good-sized frogs there. Well, in those days, you have what they call moonlight walls. And this floor, dance floor, just had a railing, more or less open. They had doors you could bring down, but there was eight or nine of us kids went over to that frog pond and had our overall pockets full of frog come over there and all kind of standing around when they just about turned the lights out on those moonlight walls. When they did, why, we started throwing frogs out on the floor. Of course, we didn't stay long. There's one lady screamed, and I still swear she just jumped straight up in there and hung there. I don't know, but...
During the moonlight waltz,
we got out of there right quick.
I can well imagine. This was, that was then prior, before the lake was raised,
oh,
too,
yeah.
We're talking.
Yeah, that was old Joe Carpenter. Run that.
Let's go back to your boating days in the lake. I know there's some stories there after your experiences on the mailboat and then out working in Manson a little bit. You then, what happened? You got back on the lake doing barge work sooner or later.
When they started the dam, Hal Field at that time owned the Comanche.
Right.
Now, speaking of the old Comanche, maybe I ought to get back to when Ray Culver and Fred Howard, that Comanche, Crooker Perry home at that time, it laid on the beach out in front of where the old Perry home is now.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of laid over on the side. And I don't remember, some way, Fred Howard and Ray Culver took a job to haul some sheep down. They'd hauled sheep in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But evidently, there'd been a few years they didn't. But I can remember of going out there. They took a wrecker on the shore and run the cable out and set it up, you know, straight.
Mm-hmm.
Got some pumps in, pumped it out, and towed it back down to the lakeside, the garage. Fred took the old mag off of that. It was an Imperial, three-cylinder Imperial gas motor in there. I think about 12-inch piston and 24-inch stroke or something.
Ooh.
He took the mag up and put it in his oven, in the old wood stove oven, baked it all night, and got it going. Then the old sheep barge, I believe, had three decks on it. They got that over there and took the top deck off. Anyway, he went up and got a load of sheep. That's kind of funny that I went with him, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Ray was down in the engine room. He run the engine, Fred in the pilot house. Of course, he's been nipping at that moonshine. We started in over Purple Point, and we had a light plant on there that went out. It was a gasoline-operated deal for lights. just we started in there, it was pitch dark, you couldn't see anything. The light plant quit, so Ray just right quick throwed out a gear till we get so Fred has some light. Fred grabbed them old battle cord and started ringing full speed ahead. Ray was using a few choice words about it. Mm-hmm. Old Fred just kept ringing when finally Ray says, well, we'll just give him full speed ahead underneath foot in the gear, and Fred will put it over there just like it was broad daylight. I don't see how he could see.
Was there a load of sheep on?
No, we were going up.
You're
to
going
load.
Up to load. Yeah. That barge was it carried a lot of sheep.
Well, the ones that I was on, we hauled 1,100 head. Now, they hauled more than that when they had three or four decks on that. Yeah. I think at one time they might have had four decks on it.
Well, the sheep business obviously was a pretty big business then around.
Well, Drumheller, he was an old sheep man, and Ben Yeager, another one. They would run those sheep up through the Methow through the summer and mm-hmm. let them graze over the mountain somewhere, and all summer long, and end up in Stehekin in the fall. Of course, they were fat then. They didn't want to so take them back the same way, so they'd bring them down on the boat, unload out around Minneapolis Beach someplace.
The sheep barge, was it probably you didn't you didn't consider having to, were you working on the sheep barge then, or were you just going along for the ride?
Well, no, this first trip I just go along for the ride.
Okay.
Now then, later years after, when we were clearing the lakeshore, why I was getting paid then, of course, I went to work for Hal Field.
Seems to me I remember a story, something about
he
this.
He ended up owning that freight on the Comanche until when Grant Smith came in and started the construction. Hal went to Seattle. Grant Smith built a barge, a freight barge over there by the about where Hal Sound Dock is now. And Hal went to Seattle and he didn't get back. They had this is how I got finally on the Comanche. They had the barge loaded and the Comanche loaded. Marion Parrish was going to run the engine, and Hal was a pilot. But Hal didn't get back. He got over and got fooling around something. And Putman, a man named Putman was the big shot in that. He went and told Marion Parrish, said, you get somebody and get that boat hooked up and that stuff up the lake, or we'll build a boat of our own, too. I was down there monkeying around. Used to be a campground. That campground, I believe, was just about where Norm Evans' place is now. Mm-hmm. Of course, the lakeshore then was different.
Yeah.
I was down there fooling around, and Marion Parrish came after me. And went over, and that's when I started then, really, on the Comanche. He took me down in the engine room, read the bells over to me. There's a bell system in there. The barge is on one side of the dock, and the boat on the other. We backed out of there and around the dock, nosed up and hooked on the barge, just simple, nothing to it. But the further up the lake it got, the more scared I got. We started going into Stehekin, and before we got in there, I told Marion, well, I'm going down below now and kind of rehearse this bell deal. So I went down, and of course you get in the engine room, you can't see out.
Right.
I waited and waited and waited. Finally, I knew I'd have to get the bell for half speed. First a jingle. They run a jingle, it means stand by. You untie throttle and get ready. He gave me a half-speed bell. I slowed it down and then just kept going. I thought, oh my God, he's going to run into the beach. There's no question about it. I stand there waiting, and bells going through mine. I knew I had to get one more bell, be neutral, and two bells be reversed, and all this. Well, what happened, Marion, he wasn't used to the pilot house either, see. And he'd slowed down too far out, and a little wind caught him out of the mouth of the river, mm-hmm. and started swinging a little bit, and he didn't go on slow, he didn't have steerage way, so in the case of that kind, he rings the jingle, he wants a little more speed. Well, I'd been sitting there thinking about reverse all the time. He rang that jingle, and the first noise I heard, I just threw it in reverse. And then he saw what I'd done, he started trying to, you know, ring me out of it. Well, every time a bell rang, I'd just give it more gas. It was just full speed of stern right down the left. He finally had to come clear down the engine room. I just went haywire all good. But the funniest thing about this story, I don't know what you're thinking, I think. We were close enough to the dock, because old John Van Meter and I think Claude Southwick, it's Claude Southwick's dad that works the boat company now. We were close enough that they could hear the bells. So anyhow, we got in, Marion was giving me all kinds of trouble about that, and them old fellows on the dock said, that boy done just exactly right. He said, you rang the wrong bells. Marion get ready to shoot them. But anyhow, then I worked about, I think, 2 years clearing the lake shore. They built another barge and put a donkey, an upright donkey engine on there with a great big boom on it. And of course, the crews went along the lake shore, cutting all trees down, burning brush. And we'd go along and pick those up with this boom and throw them in a boom logs alongside and tow them around burning spots.
They had quite a group of guys working on that project. How'd they feed them?
They had a bunkhouse at. I don't think they had one at Princeton. The bunkhouse was at Lucerne. And that's where we worked out of most of the time.
Seems to me I recollect a story from somebody about using quite a bit of dynamite and killing a lot of fish. Do you remember anything about that?
Well, now you're back down to the Columbia River again, I think.
Oh, no, I think I was talking about clearing the lakeshore, but okay. Tell me about the Columbia River.
Well, I don't know. But I don't remember about... On the Columbia River, there was a guy... went across the bridge one time on a saddle horse. And old Bill Oogles was tending the bridge down there. Mm-hmm. He wanted to leave town, I guess, some way or something. Anyway, he rode across saddle horse, and the horse came back pretty soon. No rider, and Bill went up there looking, and he found the guy's coat hanging on a big bolt over the side of the bridge, and they thought he was in there. They were down there then, dynamite, and trying to get his body up, and they're bringing up nothing but a bunch of fish. He was on his way down south someplace then. Found out later years, but...
Okay.
I think that's where you're thinking about the fish coming up. I don't remember on the... Getting back to the old Comanche one time, Hal Fialone, and Hal got another boat, an old Mohawk that was sunk over there off the lakeside. They raised that. The Grant Smith wanted another boat. Mary and I had left quite a bit ahead of Hal, and Fred Howard with him on the Mohawk. They caught us at Moore's Point. That's probably... Think about when I put the ether in the gas tank.
Yeah, I knew you had a race.
Well, the Mohawk was faster than the Comanche. Hal knew it, and Fred knew it, and they caught us just off of Moore's Point, and they were out there at the lake, and they was waving, making all kinds of faces at us, and going right on by. The Comanche had two gas tanks, port and starboard, 250-gallon tanks, and when we get down to 20-gallon, we'd always switch to the full tank so as, you know, not be making a landing and run out of gas or something.
Yeah.
I'd just switched down there a little while before that. They were pulling away from us, and I happened to look down, and we had some cases of quart cans of ether on that they took up to start those big cats with that they was using. And I'd heard about putting ether in gas tanks. So I was right quick, knocked the hole of them and turned that low tank back on and poured the ether in there. And I want to tell you, I got scared. That old motor, 316 was top speed on it.
What do you mean, 316?
That RPMs.
Mm, okay. 316?
316 was the top on that. That thing started speeding up. It shook Marion Barry. He sat in the pilot house in the big old high chair, shook him out of his chair. And it scared, and we passed him right on up the lake. I want to tell you and those guys, now hallelujah, that couldn't happen, but like Fred said later, he said, maybe it can't, but you can see that right there it's happening all right. I was scared. I didn't tell Hal for a year what happened. I think he'd kill me.
Can you remember how high the RPM went, or did it?
No, we didn't have any way of checking it right then. All I was doing was trying to get it slowed down. I was scared.
I put ether, of course you use that for starting fluid and things, and it's fairly volatile stuff. So did you beat them all the way to Stehekin?
Oh, yeah, we got in there and tied up when they come in. Now, speaking of that ether, the car salesman went at you. Years ago, the old Knapp's Hill, it used to be a place, not the original first one, but the second one they had before mm-hmm. they had the tunnel. Mm-hmm. You go to Wenatchee, buy a car, that's the first place they bring you up, see if they pull that in high gear. Well, those car salesmen had the ether in their gas tanks, and sure, you come right there flying. Well, Bert Hines lived across the river, he bought a 1925 touring car. They brought him right up there in high gear, nothing to it. A month or so later, we're standing on the street here one time talking, and Bert made a bet. I forget who now. Well, he pulled that in high gear. They made it went down, and he didn't get halfway up there. He didn't have any ether in the tank.
Let's talk a little bit about the mining days on the lake. Earlier, you're talking about activity at Stehekin and Lucerne and Meadow Creek and that area. It was really booming. What were you doing then? Into the beginnings of the Holden.
Well, now, when I wasn't here when the Holden started. I was working in Smelter, Tacoma in 1937.
Mm-hmm. When did you get back? When did you leave? Why did you leave?
Well, I went to Jim Province, who's still here. At that time, I was brother-in-law of Jim. And he was going to Castle Rock. That's where his wife lived. And we went with him to just stop in Tacoma. And I went down to that smelter. In fact, we stayed to an old lady's place that married a man working the smelter. And I got talking about the smelter. I went down one morning. Now, this in February. I thought, well, was he going to be there 2 weeks? More or less just from fooling around, I went in and applied for a job there.
And they immediately hired you?
I talked to that guy, and first, Schroeder, the old fellow's employment, he was a tough guy, and he talked kind of gruff, and he said to me, he said, what can you do, or something? I said, I can do anything you want me to do, or something. He said, I kind of doubt that. And I said, well, the only way you find out is try it. He finally said, well, come back down in the morning. We'll see. I went down there the next morning now in February, and fog over there. It's cold. It was zero here then, and mm-hmm. it was 20 above. There was a lot colder. There were 90-some fellas I counted standing around that employment office. And I hear them talking. They'd been coming there for 6 weeks, and I thought, well, what did that knothead tell me to come down here for? And I was getting kind of back out of the bunch there. I was getting ready to go back up the hill. And I got some young fellas stuck his head out and called two names. Two guys went in, and pretty soon two more went in. Then I was standing talking to a guy, a fellow named Kayberg. He stuck his head out and said, Kayberg, and called my name too. I didn't hear him. Kayberg went in, and pretty soon he stuck his head out and hollered, Henderson. That's how I went to work in that smelter.
How long did you stay there?
I worked there 18 months.
Hard work?
Yeah, hard work.
You wanted to get back?
No, back in the smelter?
No, back to here.
Oh, yeah, I wanted to get... I finally got... I didn't quit, but they started laying them off according to seniority in the union. And so they laid me off. My boss told me, said, don't you leave. Said, now, as soon as we get some other guys off, he called me back. But in fact, before I got away, he did. He called me. But I didn't go. I come back over here.
What did you have a job when you came back?
I come back over here and went right down here to where North Country, toward the depot setting. I bought that 5 acre. Philippi lived there for a long time. But I bought 5 acres of orchard there from Mr. Hauser. I bought 5 acres of orchard, a cow and 4 pigs and the pickup, Model T pickup. Bought a house that was over on another tract of orchard. All one day, I had 39 cents in the pocket.
So you were all of a sudden in the ranch business.
So I was in the apple business for a very short time. I 2 years I was there. The place had a row of cherry trees along the highway and some cots in the back. I let the kids pick the cherries. They kept track of their own weight. They couldn't weigh too well. I paid them for about a ton more. But one of the years there, what few apples I had, I took down Pacific Fruit. When they got through packing, I owed them $9.60.
You owed them $9.60?
I owed them $9.
So I can see why you weren't in the orchard business.
I got out of the orchard business right quick.
Then where'd you go?
Oh, let me see. That was 1939. Then, in 1940-something, I got back down to Portland. I worked for Dornbecker Furniture Factory a while. You're asking me a question there, I don't have to stop and think. Anyway, I ended up in a shipyard.
Building ship?
Building Liberty ships. I worked 2 years out to St. John, and those, I was there when they built the first Liberty ship, they called the Star of Oregon. It took 44 days. And the piping, just for thinking about it, the piping and that was bent wrong and didn't fit right. They had a pylon out there that you couldn't hardly put in this main street from the goofs and mistakes. They finally ended up putting a ship from the time the keel was laid to left the outfit and dock where I worked in 8 days.
That's right during the peak of the war.
Yeah.
But yeah. Took 8 days to build one.
Yeah. Now, of course, how they done that in 8 days was there's big headlines and everything and the deal about it. They had 11 ways there and they pulled all the hot shot steam fitters and welders, and while they was doing that one in 8 days, they were losing time on the other, all the other deals. But just something to talk about.
Okay, after the war, what happened?
Well, let's see. I came back to. I finally got out of the shipyard. That's kind of a funny story how I got out of the shipyard. So you couldn't quit. They wouldn't let you out. I don't think I ever told you this before.
They wouldn't let you quit because of why?
Well, you had to work. You were more or less froze on the job.
Because of the war.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, I couldn't get out, and we worked straight graveyard. And I was about half sick in that all that smoke and stuff. But I ended up being a foreman one night a week and a lead man 2 or 3 nights a week. And at that time, the service was drafting a lot of fellas. And we graveyard, and our superintendent, Tony Robinson, he came, he just daytime. Now, he come to work at 8 in the morning, and we got off at 9. Well, the service drafting these people, you had to make out quit slips for them. So I'd been taking those in to the superintendent as soon as he got there, and talking about the army getting all the good men, which they were, a lot of. Tony just signed them right quick, and that was it. They was on their way. Well, I got to tell you, one time I had 6-7 guys leave, and I thought, why don't I make me out one of my own? Because all he had to do was to sign it, so I'd get clearance out of the rest. So I did. I made out one of my name on it, about in the middle of the pile, and of course I was talking fast, so he wouldn't look at Tony. Old Tony just turned the bottom up and signed them. I went back on the boat, so this was right after 8 o'clock, and we were still there at 9. I made a bunch of bets with the guys. This is my last day, and they just laughed. But anyway, I got out of there. And then, funny story, I have to go down to the ration board to get gas. You had to get gas coupons. And the girl jumped on me. Just right, she flew. How come you're getting out of there? She said, why don't you in the army? They should get you in the army. And I said, if you've been listening to the paper, reading the paper, they want a bunch of waves and whack. Why the hell ain't you in the service? I don't know why she got on. Finally, she had Chelan, Washington mixed up with back east Washington. Finally, she knew she had to give me the coupons. She says, how far is Chelan, Washington from here? And I said, 4,200 miles. And she just started reeling them things off.
And so you left?
I left and come back here. I had more gas coupons than old Dick Ward and any of these guys.
Okay, we'll be back in a minute. Guest today on Radio Lake Chelan's Second Cup of Coffee program is Dylan Henderson. We've been talking here for a little over an hour about some of the things that he recollects as highlights here in the Lake Chelan Valley. Dylan, you left the Portland area with a pocket full of gas coupons.
That's right.
And you'd convinced the gal that it was several thousand miles to Chelan when it was only a couple hundred, 400 or 500.
Yeah, she had the Chelan, Washington, and Washington, D.C. mixed up some way. Of course, I had her mad, too.
You have a way of doing that sometimes. Yeah. You got back to Chelan, what happened?
I came back Wenatchee first. Mm-hmm. I stopped down there and worked for Night Streets Kukum before I got back up here.
What were you doing for them? I recollect some stories there.
Oh, well, now, some of those stories down there that you've heard, they had me mixed up with another man.
Is that right?
Yeah, I know whom you're talking about. I worked there 2 years and then came back up here.
And what'd you do?
My first job here then was tending bar for Larry Salbeck when I came back here.
Someplace along in here you bet someone that you could swim from Chelan to Lakeside.
Oh, that was a long time ago.
Who was it?
Chet Wick used to have the steakhouse.
Understood that. Tell me about that, the incident.
Well, we made a bet, all right. After the steakhouse closed, 2 o'clock, we went over to Lakeside Park. I had my swimming trunks on. I jumped in the lake and started to cross. I see you over at Norm Evans. So they jumped in the car and wheeled around. But what he didn't know, I had the guy sitting out on a rowboat just before he couldn't be seen. I hung on the back of the boat and he rowed across there before we got in. He stayed out and then I swam the rest of the way. The old Chet got a little worried.
That's what I understand.
He got to where I wish I hadn't a bet to fool. But I finally swam in.
Seems to me I heard that he was worried to the point of almost wanting to call the police.
Well, that's what I remember they were talking about, but I finally swam in there. I hadn't swum over 100 yards, maybe, and all out of breath, tired as hell.
What was the bet?
Oh, I just can't recall now what it was. $25, maybe, or something.
Okay. You were tending bar. Where at?
I attended Barfler Sawback, what we call the Middle Tavern.
You remember Dirty Bill Beeman?
Oh, yeah.
Was he ever in there?
No, I don't recall Bill ever coming to the tavern.
Tell me a bit about Bill, what you recall about Bill.
Well, of course, I known him all the years, see him every time he come to town. He used to live over there, right across from where Carol Clem's got her.
Right.
Shop now. But I recall, I was in his place where he lived one time down there. I was fooling around there some. Bill went down and dug a hole in the flat spot in the dirt. He dug down maybe 2 feet or 2.5 feet.
Just down in the gorge?
Yeah. He dug down that deep, and then he put a home, probably a 9x12 tent, stretched it over that, and that's where he lived. Now, to get into that place, his bed was right where the front, the tent flap was. Now, to go in there, you crawl over his bed. And then on the other end, he had a little stove and stuff where he cooked. But when he had some of the goats having little ones, he had them in there with him. I was there one time, he had two goats in there that were having little goats right in the place with him.
How old were you then? We're going back in a few years, I'm assuming.
Well, yeah, I was, that was not too many years ago. That was after the dam was
okay.
Built and stuff. He was down about what we call the Camp 2 at it there.
Now, what's that?
That's where they tunneled into the tunnel. So they started tunneling here where the dam is now and started tunneling at Chelan Falls. They met about halfway. And
I see.
But that Camp 2 deal is where they went down and tunneled a hole right back into the main tunnel to, I suppose, to get
equipment
in and out easier.
Hmm.
I worked in that tunnel just one day. My dad was working in there, and he got me to go down. Now, they were getting fairly close together, and they shot a blast off in the other end. The end coming from Chelan Falls, and up where we were, rock stuff falling all around every time they'd shoot.
Didn't take you too long.
So just that one day is all I put in that.
Let's after you were, did you work for the boat company on the boats after what, into the late 40s
or
50s?
No, just extra once in a while. I see. I left. About the time the dam was finished. And I went and done a little stretching in the Navy. You could get in there 2 years for then. I left home then, nobody knew where I went really. I did mail a postcard back home, but forgot to put the address on it.
So you... you just basically dropped out of sight for a couple of years?
Well, no, they finally knew where I was. But I was in there for 2 years and came back to California then. And then finally ended up back here at Chelan.
What was the road like between here and Chelan Falls Station when your first recollections of that?
The first road station was, went down right behind the fish hatchery, where the fish hatchery is now, on that sand hill. Now that was just a one-way road.
You took a job hauling water once, didn't you, up and down there?
No.
Perhaps I'm mistaken.
Maybe you think about when I went to work for Beebe, carrying water to thinners.
I can't remember. I remember a story about this.
Well, I always said I went to work 6 years old. I wasn't lying too much. I wasn't very old. Someone was asking me over at Safeway the other day what I was doing there. I told them I was working, but I got fired. I wanted to know why, and I said I had to go to the house to get mother chained my diaper too often and boss candy.
Dylan, we've talked quite a bit. Is there anything, any little areas that you know, maybe we haven't touched on that might be funny or amusing to people?
I don't know. There are a lot of them. a lot of them probably shouldn't be on the air. But getting back to the BB Archers, it's interesting to a lot of people about the apple and stuff. At one time, the BB Company tried to put a pipe across the Columbia River from about where the pear orchard is now, or was then.
Mm-hmm.
It's above where the old bridge was.
Mm-hmm.
To get water over there, said before the bridge was built, and a lot of people don't remember that pipe deal, but we were just kids. I remember them over on the BB side, they dug a great big hole for a dead man, you know, and put cable and stuff in it. They strung cable across the river to this side, and they would thread that pipe on the cable. As near as I can remember, it probably was an 8-inch steel pipe. They would thread it on the cable and fasten it together. I don't remember if they welded or band, but and then just keep pushing across, mm-hmm. You know. And they would get it just about across. Of course, the further across you got, the more current and stuff you had there, and the more pressure. They just about get across with it, and the pull the dead man out, and the cable, everything go down the river.
They tried that a couple times, did they?
They tried it. I remember there, all seemed like all one summer. Another interesting thing that happened to that BB that a lot of people don't remember about, there is Hadoo probably does. He was a little bit of a shaver then. The only way they get back and forth across the river then was with they had a barge and an old inboard tug or motor boat of some kind alongside. They were taking a load of lumber across. A fellow named Anton Johnson lived on top of the hill from BB. Was running the boat. They had Bill Ewells had a 4-horse team and a wagon load of lumber on the old barge and the boat alongside. And they had crossed the river and was on the beach. But old Anton didn't have it sitting just quite where he wanted to move it a little bit, and there were guys on the beach with a line in their hand, and he backed out. You want to back out and move it a little bit. And they pulled the line out of this fellow's hand that wrapped around the propeller, of course killed the engine. And the boat floated down. I don't remember how Anton got out of there. But I know it went down by where the old BB bridge was. There's a rock over on the other side that hit and tipped up on edge, tipped the horses and the wagon and stuff over.
There's quite a series of rapids in there, wasn't there, somewhere?
Well, it was...
pretty good current.
Yeah, good current then. Anyway, old Bill was sitting upon the one corner stuck up high. He was riding there, and he went by Chelan Falls. Charlie Carter went out and got him off in a rowboat. But they found some of the wagons and stuff later down around Antioch or someplace. But Bill was always felt bad. He was pretty fond of horses, and he didn't think about if he'd got down could got them unhooked and stuff. Of course, they could have swam out. But
you remember the efforts to raise the lake with little slat dams or this sort of
well,
thing?
When I first came around, those things ran down there.
Did they work?
All I can remember about that is...
Seems like that'd be a good place to go play.
Like when the old steel bridge went across down there, then close to that.
Right.
You could walk across down, go down here, but I think we'd go right past the old post office.
You didn't go.
But we didn't fool around there very much.
Hmm.
But I can remember as the water, the lake raised, how much is it? It was a bigger fall of water coming over that old wooden deal there. It used to be quite a current there when we come down to the old pavilion where we used to pick up passengers. You making the curve there and landing, boy, you ever missed her once you've right down again the old steel bridge.
Any other little areas that we should be talking about before we...
I can't. Getting back to that BB orchard. A lot of people don't remember. Mr. Hellowell was a manager of that. When they first built the packing shed on this, after the bridge was built, I think that bridge was built in 21, the same year we left there. They hauled the wine saps and the rum stuff over on this side of the packing shed, but the common delicious, he made them pack them over there. He didn't want to too much traveling, too much brews on them. At that time, he made the pickers pick those in galvanized buckets. And he'd pull alfalfa, which is a cover crop there, and put in the bottom of the bucket. And you get that bucket full, you just didn't walk over and tip it over in the box. You sat down on your kneel down and tip those out by hand.
This was for his common reds? Delicious.
For common delicious. It wasn't any reds then. But Charlie Beebe, he come from the Beebe family. They shipped him out there. He was postmaster for a long time. Now, to get the mail to that place, he used to walk down by our house. We lived down at this end of the ranch then. Get in the rowboat, row over and meet the train. I saw him come back past the house on the way back up to the headquarters, carrying mail sacks around him till all you could see was his feet.
You had to always go, you went by my boat and across the river.
Right, until they built the bridge, see.
Beebe Company helped fund that bridge.
Well, they built it, I think.
In its entirety?
I think so, yeah.
How long was it a toll bridge?
Oh, God, I don't remember. Well, that was a toll bridge up in the middle 50s.
Not long. Any other things we should be talking about, touch on? It's been enjoyable.
Oh, I don't think so. A thousand things you could tell, but we wouldn't have time for that.